You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday the 16th of September 2020, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at RadioAlbion.com. Well, today I thought we would have a look at the Nazi accusations that get made against nationalists and the reason for them, and also have a little look at National Socialism, because we do get accused of being Nazis a lot, and it's a bit confusing. I mean, I can remember before I was a nationalist, and I can recall the National Front being accused of being Nazis. And yet, when I saw the National Front, they were waving Union Jack flags. And I can remember thinking, weren't the Nazis German? Don't nationalists stand up for their nation? Why are the National Front being called Nazis when they claim to be standing up for Great Britain, and Great Britain went to war with Germany? This doesn't compute. This is not right. There is something here that I am not being told. And of course, what we're not being told is that the National Socialists actually had a very good system that looked after the German people. We're given an image of National Socialism in Hollywood and in the mainstream media, which portrays the Germans as vicious, inhuman devils that were just setting out to exterminate all the world's Jews, or at least all the Jews in Europe. And that's a very cartoonish depiction of them. So I guess we should really start with what National Socialism was really about. National Socialism was a reaction to communism, which was going on in Eastern Europe. And the Bolsheviks were a team of criminals, basically. They were bank robbers and violent, very, very violent people, thugs, basically. And the majority of them were Jewish, and they were funded by American bankers to have a revolution in Russia. And they had their revolution in Russia. They also took over a part of Germany for a short time. And the Germans were very concerned about this, and Adolf Hitler himself was very concerned about this and did not want this to happen to Germany. Also, at the time in Germany, you had the Weimar Republic, and after the Versailles Treaty at the end of World War I, Germany was impoverished. It was having to pay back all these debts. It was having to pay back for everything to do with the whole war, basically. And this meant that Germans were having to prostitute themselves. Germans were starving. And there were Jews in Germany at the time that took great advantage of this situation. Because Jews have a rather international flavor to them, they move from country to country, not having a country of their own at the time. They didn't have Israel at the time. And Jews were able to move to Germany and buy up farms, buy up stores, because they still had plenty of money. So they could make use of the fact that the Germans didn't have any money, and the Jews did have a lot of money. Also, Jewish culture was being promoted, and Jewish culture is different to European culture. The Jews like to promote ideas like divorce, transvesticism, homosexuality, all these sorts of things that we see as nationalists, that we see as subverting society, but which today we see as just being progressive. There was an institute, a sex institute in Berlin, and they were doing the first transsexual operations. They were promoting homosexuality, lesbianism, and this went in hand with the communism and the degeneracy of the arts, the theatre, movies. Plus, we also had this concept of modern art. And the Germans saw this as emanating from the Jews, and they also saw the fact that what they called the stab in the back, which caused them to lose World War One, because they were winning World War One, and then the Jews turned against them. And we know that they did turn against them. That was the offer that was made in the Balfour Declaration to Britain. There was an offer made that if Britain would give the Jews Palestine as a homeland, the American Jews would ensure that Jews around the world supported Britain in this war. And at the end of the war, there was lots of strikes. At the end of the First World War, there was lots of strikes. And this was called the stab in the back. It's quite complicated. If you want to look more into it and the history of this, then I would recommend the first part of Mein Kampf, which talks about what happened at the end of the First World War. So there was a movement against the Jewish subversion of Germany. And the bankers were all Jews. A large portion of the lawyers were. The doctors were. And they were basically buying everything up and having an inordinate amount of power. Hitler saw this, and he saw the problems that this was causing. He also had a bit of a racial awakening, and he understood that the value of a nation is not in its material wealth. The material wealth fluctuates. The price of gold fluctuates. The value of a nation is in its people, because it's only the people that can actually create things. The banking system doesn't create things. The banking system makes money out of putting interest on loans. It's without human beings to actually create value, the banking system can't produce anything at all. So he realized this. And at the center of National Socialism was this idea of putting the German people first and the wider white race first. And if you're going to be putting your people first, that means that you're not going to be putting other people first. And the Jews were alarmed at this, and international Jewry rose up against it. And once Hitler took power, they organized a boycott of the German economy right at the time when the Germans really needed trade with the rest of the world. And Hitler revamped the banking system. And because the Jews in the rest of the world were trying to boycott Germany and provoke other countries into going to war against Germany, the Germans weren't best pleased with the Jews. They removed them from office, which they had a right to do because they had voted in this party that said that they were going to do what was best for the German people. And if you're going to have another people that are actually in office and making laws, they're going to be making laws to benefit themselves. They're not going to be making laws to benefit the Germans. So they paid the pensions. They paid very generous pensions to all the Jews that were in civil positions, and said, well, you're going to have to do something else now. And also the Jews that owned the newspapers and the magazines and the media, they said, you're going to have to do something else now because we've changed the law to make it so that only German people can own the media. Now, this is all very sensible. You don't want other people to be owning the means of telling your people what the news is and shaping public opinion. Just look at the problems that we have now with riots and looting in America, because the people that own the newspapers over there have told the Americans that the police are these racist monsters that are just looking for black people to assassinate them for the color of their skin. That's the narrative. The latest victim in this was a black man wielding a huge knife about to attack a police officer. The police officer shot him. There have now been protests and a police station set on fire, and it's being promoted as this was a needless killing of an innocent young black man. And you just look at George Floyd. The guy died of a drug overdose, and look at the riots and looting that have gone on since then and the accusations of racism. And all of this benefits the people that are running the newspapers. It benefits the oligarchs, but it certainly doesn't benefit the American people. And it did not benefit the German people in any way to have Jews running their newspapers and magazines and t- telling them things that were going to be of benefit to the Jews. This is just common sense. So Hitler put these policies into action. He also put into place policies to improve the health of the race, eugenic policies, encouraging people with good genes to breed and not encouraging people with bad genes to breed. People with bad genes were considered to be people with congenital diseases, people with alcoholism in the family, people with a lot of criminality in the family. Criminality does tend to go down the generations. If you have a large lot of criminals in one family, their descendants are very likely to be criminals and their grandparents are very likely to be criminals. A good example of this would be certain sections of the gypsy community who have a history of being involved in crime. And I'm not saying all gypsies are, not all gypsies are, but they do have a reputation for that. And the fact that they have the reputation for that shows that there is this heritability aspect to it. So what the National Socialists were doing was trying to make the best policies for the nation, the best policies that they could for Germany. Some aspects of it were German specific, but other aspects of it could be applied to any race at all. And this is why you have National Socialist movements in places like Chile. You had a National Socialist movement in Iran. Iran even changed its name from Persia to Iran because they wanted to be linked with the Aryan history. And they took a big interest in National Socialism and what was going on there. You had a National Socialist movement in India. You had these National Socialist movements everywhere, basically. You had people saying, well, why aren't we doing what is best for our people? And Hitler said National Socialism is not for export. And what he meant by that is that he didn't want to conquer the world and force everybody to be Germans, unlike the mainstream narrative that is portrayed. But the essentials of National Socialism are going to be the same for nationalism. If you're a nationalist and you want to do the best for your extended family and you want to have society formed around the nation, the ethnic nation, then the sort of policies that you are going to put in place are going to be similar policies to the National Socialist policies. And groups like the National Front understood this. And ethno-nationalists understand this. And this is why there is this support for National Socialism. There is no support for executing Jews or the Holocaust, the so-called Holocaust. And this is the main weapon that is used against nationalists today is to say, well, if you have nationalism, it's going to lead to the Holocaust. It's going to lead to Jews being put into camps and Jews being gassed. So let's just have a look at this. Let's have a look at this in detail. When the war started, they put any Germans that were in Britain, they put into camps. In America, any Japanese that were in America, they put into camps. If you have members of a hostile country that are living within your country and you are at war, they have to be secured. They have to be secured for their own protection because they might be attacked by members of the host country. And they also have to be protected for your protection because they could be involved in sabotage. And once the war started, the Jews that were in Germany had to be put into camps because they were a hostile group that were within the nation. So they were put within these camps. Not all of them, because there were some part Jews that were serving in the army. There were some part Jews that had shown that they were supportive of Germany. They had assimilated, in other words. There was a movement to keep Jews from assimilating, which was Zionism. There was a movement for Jews to get involved in communism, which I mentioned earlier. And there was also a small movement for Jews to assimilate and be like Germans. And there were thousands of Jews that had assimilated, that were serving in the Wehrmacht and elsewhere. But Jews that had shown that they were loyal to communism and Jews that had shown that they were loyal to Zionism or anti-German, they were put into these camps. The Germans also did their best to send the Jews that they had to Palestine. They had a system in place where Jews could give all their property over to the Germans, and the property would then be sold, and the money that it was sold for would then be used to purchase all the goods that these Jews would need for setting up in their new homeland in Palestine. And then the Jews would move to Palestine, and they'd have all the new goods that they needed. Like, say, they would need tractors to be working on a farm or what have you. And this worked well because it meant that the Jews could go to where they wanted to be. It meant that the Germans could improve their economy by making these new goods that these Jews needed, that they wanted to take with them to Israel. And everybody was happy. But once the war started, this was prevented from continuing. And I think Britain had quite a lot to do with it to prevent this from continuing. It was called the Havarah Agreement. Now, before the war actually started, the Germans already had these camps. And the idea was that people that were going off course, people that were behaving in an undesirable way, they would go to these camps and they would learn the value of work. They would learn a trade. They would be taught the importance of the nation, the importance of being an upstanding member of the nation. And they would try to correct these people to understand where they were going wrong, basically. That was the point of these camps. They weren't set up so much to punish people as to correct them and get them back on the right course. And people would only be sent to them if they were persistent offenders, as it were. And you would have people like homosexuals, gypsies, communists, subversives that were put in these camps. At the start of the war, more Jews started to be put in these camps because they were seen as this hostile group that were within Germany, because Jews around the world were then a hostile group towards Germany. It was only common sense to do this. As the war progressed, they needed work. Germans needed a work effort. So they enlisted the people that were within these camps to work for the war effort. And Auschwitz was a huge industrial center, making rubber and all sorts of things that were needed for the war effort. We had the same in Britain. We had a lot of the women were involved in working in these factories. I don't know if we had people that were in the camps that we had over here in Britain, whether they had them working or not. In Germany, they had camp scrip. They had this way of actually paying the people that were within the camps to do the work. Now, there's this idea that this was some kind of slave labor. But the last thing that you would want in an important part of the war effort in a factory is somebody that did not want to be working there, because they would be likely to sabotage things. And if you've got a large industrial center, you've got some very expensive equipment there. And if you've got somebody there that doesn't want to be working, they can very easily sabotage it and cost you an absolute fortune. So the idea that there would have been people working in these camps that didn't want to be working, that were being forced to do this, I don't think is very likely. Also, you have the idea that people would get bored not doing anything at all. They would like to be working. When you have prisons today, favored prisoners get a chance to work in the kitchens or to work in the library. The chance to actually do some work is looked upon favorably. So these prisoners, or these work camp inmates, they were put to work. There were rumors that were being put about that people were being gassed. And there were investigations to see whether these rumors were true. There were investigations. The Germans did investigations into this. They couldn't find any evidence for it. I think the British did investigations into this after the war and found that there was no evidence for it. And this is on the sides after the war, the camps that the British people investigated. They found no evidence for it. The Soviets were the ones who said that they found evidence of gassings, and it was never actually proved. There was no international team that went in to see the evidence that the Soviets had unearthed, gas chambers or the like or anything like that, because the Soviets wouldn't allow them in. And of course, we know the Soviets were not truthful about lots of things. They blamed the Germans for the Kachin massacre In the Nuremberg trials, the Germans were blamed for the Katyn massacre. 20,000 Polish aristocracy were just massacred and buried in a pit by the Soviets. And they blamed the Germans for this right up until the 1990s, when the Iron Curtain fell and the information came out that it was actually the Soviets that did this. Now, at the end of the war, in the last 6 months of the war, there was a lot of destruction everywhere. The Germans themselves were starving, and the Allies had decided to bomb the supply lines, the train lines, the roads, farms. It was just people on tractors were being bombed. And what this meant was that medical supplies and food supplies could not reach the camps. And very quickly, in a situation like that, you are going to get disease rife. And there was typhus and dysentery, typhoid, all these diseases that basically starve people. And when they can't eat, they get diarrhea, the skin falls off them, you get a lot of death. And there was a lot of people that were starved by these bombing raids, just because medicine and food could not get into these camps. So when the camps were finally liberated, there were a lot of dead people. There was no evidence of gas chambers, though, but there were a lot of dead people, and this was caused by the Allied bombings. There was this rumor of the gas chambers, though, and I guess somewhere along the line, somebody decided that they were going to capitalize on this, because when they had the Nuremberg trials, which were the kangaroo court, victor's justice, they tried the leaders of National Socialism, and they beat confessions out of them. They beat them to such an extent that their testicles were damaged beyond repair. They threatened them with their children being handed over to the Soviets to rape and destroy. Their entire families were threatened to be handed over to the Soviets. So you had a situation there where false confessions would be extremely likely. And we have this confession of gassings. And the person that actually made the confession of the gassings, in his confession, it's got camps that didn't even exist in the confession, which tends to show that it was made up. And that was his way of putting it across, that it was made up. The actual eyewitnesses that talk about these gassings, they contradict one another. The idea was that what the Germans did, they had holes in the roof and they threw cyanide pellets in. And when the cyanide pellets hit the floor, they made a gas which killed everybody. And the gas that they claimed was being used was cyanide. Cyanide was used to get rid of the lice. It was used to clean the clothes of the workers when they arrived for the work camp. Clothes were put through a de-lysing machine, which used cyanide, which was the most effective way to get rid of these lice. The prisoners would also have their heads shaved because of the lice. They would have their boots taken, and they would have new boots that they were given. The work camp issue boots and work camp issue uniforms they were given. This is the origin of these piles of hair that you see in Auschwitz. But the supposed killing device was throwing these pellets in through the roof. It's impossible to do that. You can't throw cyanide pellets in and they just evaporate. They have to be heated up in order to evaporate. Nobody talked about a way of actually getting these cyanide pellets to heat up. When we look at Auschwitz, we look at the supposed Auschwitz gas chamber. It had a wooden door that opened inwards. If it had all these bodies within it that had died, then how would you even be able to open the door? When you look at the number of crematoria that Auschwitz had, it was impossible to burn the number of bodies that we were originally told. We were originally told 4 million Jews died at Auschwitz. It's completely impossible. It was impossible for them to die from cyanide pellets being thrown in, and it was impossible to cremate that number of bodies. If that number of bodies were going to be created, it would use a certain amount of coal. And we have the aerial photographs that show that there was no coal there. We also have the decoded messages from Auschwitz and from all the camps, because we knew what the Germans were saying in the last 6 months of the war. We had decoded their code, basically, and there's no evidence from the decoded messages that there was any gassings that were going on. We have interviews with lots of Jews themselves. Steven Spielberg collected interviews with the Jews to document the Holocaust. And they talk about how they had a cinema, they had an orchestra, they were well looked after. They didn't hear of any gassings. This gassings thing was a rumor that was started in the camps themselves. And possibly it was caused by seeing certain types of machinery that people didn't understand what the machinery was used for. And you got these exaggerations. At the end of the war, there is actually an instance where the British Army were saying, if anybody is found to be persisting with this false gossip, they will be arrested. And as I say, on the Allied side, they didn't find any evidence of this. The Russians said that they did on the Soviet side. We can then look at Auschwitz itself. It has a fake chimney that's put on the outside to claim that that was the crematorium and it was built later. We can see that these holes that were in the roof of the so-called gas chamber, they had been put in later. We can see that the so-called gas chamber itself was the morgue. It was the cold room. That was the room where the bodies were put and stored before they would go into the crematorium. We can also see that Auschwitz had a hospital. It had a brothel. It had a swimming pool. It had a football pitch. This lie that the Germans were monsters and they just killed all these Jews simply for being Jews is not the truth. If it was the truth, it would not fear investigation. We would not have to have 27 countries in the European Union where it is against the law to investigate this historical event. They use the excuse of, it hurts the Jews' feelings. Why would it hurt the Jews' feelings to be investigating this? If they discovered evidence that showed that in actual fact their ancestors weren't tortured to death, they didn't die in this horrific, horrible way, surely that would be a wonderful thing for them to discover if there was conclusive proof of this. And I believe there is conclusive proof of this. Other proofs that we can look at, the census, the number of Jews that there were before the war in the almanac, the Jewish almanac, and we can look at the number of Jews that there were after the war. The value of this Holocaust story has been that it's now taught in schools, it's now used to terrify small children with. We have full spectrum dominance by the Holocaust. I don't think a day goes past without it being mentioned on the mainstream television channels in one way or another. And it always gets used as the fail-safe argument as to why we can't have nationalism. We can't have nationalism because it leads to the Holocaust. And also, we can't discuss the political policies, the social programs of the National Socialists, because that also leads to the Holocaust. And of course, nationalists understand that if we were to have a nationalist state, if we were to do the sort of things that we need to do to promote the best for our people, it would look very similar to the sort of things that the National Socialists did. We would have to revamp the banking system, revamp the education system. We would have to stop the things that are harmful to our people, things like pornography, things like usury, things like gambling. These sorts of things, they would either have to be frowned upon or they would have to be removed because they are harmful to our people. And the people that promote multiculturalism and progressivism, they don't want people to investigate National Socialism. They don't want people to realize that in actual fact, we are going down the wrong path with what we are doing here. So they use this Holocaust all the time, and they use this accusation that nationalists are Nazis. They will call us neo-Nazis. And their implication in that is that we want to execute all the Jews. We don't want to execute the Jews. All we want to do is be able to have a discussion about the way that different ethnic minority groups advocate for their own interests. And there's nothing wrong with advocating for your own interests. There is nothing wrong with Jews doing what is best for the Jews. The problem we have is, as white people, we are not allowed to advocate for doing what is best for us. We are not allowed to have groups that speak up for us. We are told that is racism. That is white supremacy. If we discuss the ways that Jewish advocacy groups or representatives of Jews are acting in our society, such as by calling for more immigration, we're told that's anti-Semitism. If we talk about the criminality of black people, we are told that's racism. We just want to be able to talk about what is going on in our multicultural societies so that we can protect ourselves from the very worst harms from it. We're told that the very worst thing in the world is racism. Well, we have a way to deal with racism as well. The way to deal with racism is just to separate the races. And then there would be no more racism. If you had black people living in one area, white people living in another area, Jews living in another area, there would be no racism. There would be no anti-Semitism. That is the solution to all these problems that we have. But we are told that to suggest that is somehow white supremacist. That's somehow neo-Nazi or racist. When in actual fact, it is just common sense. And nationalism, when you think about it, that's all it is. It is just a common sense view of how we should be living. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.